In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Please be seated. Before I begin my sermon, I want to mention that this rose here, a tradition here at St. Peter's, is when there's been a birth in the extended family in the congregation. And this rose here this day is to celebrate the birth of Balin Pierce Preston, the son of Stephanie and Luke Preston, the great-grandson of Bob and Barb LeMay. So they are here with us this morning. So keep them in your prayers and send them some congratulatory notes. They also bought a house this week as well, so it's been a banner week for them. They had furniture delivered, but it was someone else's furniture, so they're waiting on the third good thing. So anyway, they're still with us very much in spirit. Jesus said, "Do not be afraid, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." Friends, I wrote a sermon earlier this week for today and realized yesterday morning I had to do something completely different for today, so I tore it up because of the events having taken place these past weeks in our nation. I had to admit to myself I didn't really want to address what I need to talk about because of my own fear. However, the first line in today's gospel gave me courage to speak about things I'd rather not talk about. I thought I didn't want to speak because I was afraid of alienating some of you in this congregation. However, the real reason I discovered was Friday night I watched a very disturbing and painful movie called Do the Right Thing. This movie forced me to look at my own heart and my own issues. Now, here's what I have to talk about this morning. We continue to witness untold violence in mass shootings that plague our country. At the same time, we are witnessing deep divisions over issues of immigration. Both these issues have, in my mind, the same radical cause, meaning the same root cause. A problem none of us wants to consider, and the problem is endemic racism, not only in our country, but in our own hearts and minds. Friday night's painful movie that I watched brought me face to face with the fact I remain a racist. What it unleashed was a realization of the complexity of this issue. It is far more complex than just white people holding racist thoughts about people of color. This stain has infected every corner and every aspect of every culture and subgroup in the world. It is at the heart of the rise of authoritarianism and nationalistic tendencies around the globe, as well as here at home. So per usual, let me share some of my own story that may shed light on what I discovered about myself Friday night. When I left Catholic Seminary in 1979, and Art and I met in 1981, we moved into a house together. We rented a townhouse from a member of our parish on Capitol Hill, but it was in a broken down neighborhood. It was, as they say, in the hood. Actually, except for one other person, we were the only white people in the neighborhood for blocks and blocks. It was there I experienced the depths of racism that I've been trying to forget now for some 38 years. In my naivete of being a young Midwest boy from an all-white town, I thought I could enter any community and we'd all end up singing Kumbaya. This was not the case. Everyone knew who we were in the neighborhood, the gay white boys who moved in. But we didn't know very many people at all. I remember one time we had a cracked tail light on our tail of our car, and some kids from God knows where, blocks away, came to knock on our door and tell us our light was broken. Next door to us was an African-American single mom and her child who we did get to know. On the other side of us was another black family who we had some relation with. Behind us, our backyards bordered an elderly African-American woman who had mixed-race grown children and grandchildren who lived in Potomac, Maryland. Now, any of you who know of what Potomac is, it still is among the richest towns in the United States. Directly across the street from me was a townhouse occupied by a group of prostitutes whose windows looked directly into my own house. I remember I would sit at the table and windows would be open in the spring, and I'd see them waving to me, saying, "Come over for a free sample," they would yell. Around the corner was another elderly black family couple. They would have us over to dinner once in a while. All of these neighbors were broken into by thieves, arrested, or in the case of the elderly woman whose backyard bordered mine, murdered by her half-white, half-black grandson who came in from a wealthy Potomac and killed his grandmother for money. We were the only ones of very few that they left alone. The elderly folks loved that we lived there because they saw us as a stabilizing factor. I remember one day leaving for work, which was about a 20-minute walk down Maryland Avenue from our house toward the U.S. Capitol, and the D.C. police shouted, "Fall to the ground!" There was an active shooting on my street. So on my stomach, in my jacket and tie, I crawled on my stomach past the police line, got up, and kept walking to work. This was my day-to-day life, a witness to violence and pain every single day. And a thought just occurred to me, the prostitutes we discovered, there were ambulances one day outside my house, and they were pulling a woman out of the house where the prostitutes lived, because what had happened is the nephew of the woman who owned the house, an elderly woman, they held hostage in the back of the house. I didn't even know she was there for almost 2 years until they rescued her, and that's how the prostitutes all got evicted and arrested. What did these experiences do to me? They made me angry and they made me afraid. They made me feel the hopelessness that anything could ever change. I saw a community who inflicted violence on itself most of all. I didn't sleep well at nights. Every small noise had me up at the windows trying to see what was going on. I became our own neighborhood watch. I realized after time we did not belong in this neighborhood. So after 2 years, we moved to a different part of Capitol Hill where there was a greater mix of people. Yet even amidst all the terrible things that I saw and felt, I also saw moments of deep love and caring among these people. I loved a diverse community of mixed races and cultures. So, the optimism of this kumbaya young man was not completely lost. When we moved to Connecticut, it was difficult getting used to being around so many white people. I had come to love living in a diverse community. The humor, especially of the black women in D.C., gave me some great stories of how some of my black friends would take the most serious things and turn them into funny stories to make them humorous, which I guess was a part of the survival. And I missed wondering if we, and I started to wonder, did we make the right choice moving north? That's why when I was first ordained, the only place I felt comfortable to serve was in Hartford, where I had at least a chance to recapture the joy and diversity I came to love living in Washington, D.C. However, the movie last night shattered any illusion. This was Friday night. I had everything sorted out. The reason that I watched it and the reason I'm sharing all this with you this morning is because at last year's diocesan convention, the delegates of convention voted to enter a 2-year period of examining racism in all its ugly forms as essential for the healing of our church, our parishes, ourselves, and our world. I have not brought any of this to your attention until now because I was and am afraid to look at these issues. The movie I saw was filled with violence and pain. In my naivete, I was looking for the moment when they would all sing Kumbaya and all would be well, but that was not to happen. I saw some of the things in the movie I lived through in the early days in DC in that neighborhood. The loss of hope and purpose having just given up. The violence among family members. Racism among members of the Black community toward Puerto Ricans, Asians, and whites. Mostly I saw fear, mistrust, and anger on all sides. The movie showed me the frustration of the police and sometimes how they get it right and sometimes how they get it wrong. They're not perfect either. Yet, I also saw in this movie characters who loved their community. White, Black, Hispanic, and Asian who wanted more, like many of the people I met and knew in DC. There were many God moments in the movie, but no Kumbaya. It had a lot of swearing and violence in it. It made me look at things I've tried to bury and deny for nearly 40 years now. I dreamt about it all Friday night, and I remember in my sleep even praying about it. The answer I got was on Saturday morning in prayer. I was to stop running and denying my own racism and to write this sermon. Just this Friday, we learned also that all of the mass shootings that took place in 2018 in our country were done by self-proclaimed white supremacists. In 2018, no jihad, no Muslims, no outside mass shooters. In 2018, all of them were white male Americans who learned somehow in their lives that they are superior to others. My friends, this is not the way of God. What it means for me and for us is, if we really want to understand what's going on in our culture and to change our world, we must look squarely at the pain and the violence. We need to make ourselves uncomfortable and wrestle with the truth of racism we've never looked at before. I watched a second movie just yesterday again called Blindspotting, which demonstrates that it's not intentional, but there are blind spots that each of us carry. We don't know what we don't know because we can't see it. This movie opened my eyes to blind spotting both as a positive thing where we think some people are just perfect and when they fail us, we can't deal with that, or people that we think are awful and they do good things and we can't reconcile that either. We have to sort these things out in our own hearts and our own minds and look squarely at it if we are to grow. And I'll be honest with you, I do not want to do this work at all. Also, I know I cannot let alone lead it by myself with you. I can't plan a program by myself. I have lots of good resources to start to think about what we need, but I need a small group of courageous people who are willing to delve into their own pain so we can more meaningfully look at the destruction that racism has wrought. It must first be done by exploring our own deeply embedded racism and ideas I, and I'm sure many of us, would rather not consider. There is frankly no other way out of this mess. So with that being said, this is an open invitation. I invite you to pray, not answer right away, but to seriously pray and see if you are being called to be part of a small task force that'll be willing to look at racial healing and join me in the future in leading us here through this journey at St. Peter's. This is a journey set as a priority by the Episcopal Church of Connecticut's convention, not our bishops, not coming down from up high, but our fellow Episcopalians have asked us to take this work on. It's work I've avoided, but I can say no longer. Jesus said, "Don't be afraid, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." Our gospel assures us today that if we let go of our fear and look at the truth, starting with ourselves, God will give us what we need. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.